Dana, did you get that story that I sent?
I did. I'm loving this.
Me too. This is Dr. Dana Varble. She is the chief veterinary officer for the North American Veterinary Community. I call her Chicago's Exotic Pet Vet because that is the name of the... Is it Chicago's Exotic Pet Vet? That's the name of the business, right?
Chicago Exotic Animal Hospital.
Oh,
yes,
there
that's
it is.
My clinical job. Absolutely.
Yeah. So tell everybody about this story. And did you find, I know you find it amusing, but it must be true, right?
It's got some interesting points, for sure. So this is a study that was done. It was a pretty small study. So, you know, take it with a little grain of salt. But basically, it was talking about how cats greet their owners. And there was a significantly higher rate of vocalizations for their male owners as opposed to their female owners. And the story went on to give a couple of really... This is what I find amusing, Lisa.
I know.
You do too.
Yeah, absolutely.
First, they were like, well, maybe guys, basically, they were accusing men of basically not picking up on the cat's cues.
Right, so, right. And so the cat's like, hey, I'm screaming, I'm meowing, I'm over here, please pay attention. Yeah.
And then the other part that I was absolutely just in hysterics over was there's a comment basically that the more a man responds to the vocalization, of course, the more the cat does it. And I'm like, so once again, and I know we've talked about this many times, who is training who in
that
relationship?
That's right.
Who is training who? Yeah, it makes you think, is the cat just going, over here, buddy, over here, over
right.
here,
right.
over here, good job, you know? It's just, it's crazy to think about.
If you want to check it out, it's in Newsweek. It's at newsweek.com, and the title is Cats mm-hmm. Talk Differently to Men and Women. And, yeah, it's a small sample, but maybe it happens in your house as well. I just got to say, I'm married to a guy where cats just cling to him. Cling to him. You could walk anywhere, and if a cat's in the neighborhood, it's going to find him and cling to him. They just take
yeah,
to some
I really
people.
What I really want is a study about people who don't like cats. Why cats
yes.
seem to... like them. I'm like, this is great. This is a great start. I want these researchers to follow up and say, okay, let's let gender roles go. What is it about people that don't like cats that cats decide that they are just their best buddies every time?
Every time somebody who hates cats, my cat wants that to be the lap they sit on first on the couch. I'm like, here it mm-hmm. goes.
This happens to me all the time.
Oh, yeah, because Mary doesn't like cats either.
All the time. The first time I met some in-laws, the cat, I went to their house. They knew I was not a cat lover. The cat comes right over to me, jumps in my lap, and I screamed so loud. And I threw the cat across the room almost because I jumped
Mary!
Up. I jumped up. It was a reflex. I couldn't help it.
It was reflex,
it scared
yeah.
me
it
to death.
You think, like, what are they picking up? What are... I mean,
they're
what
smart. They know you hate them.
Are we kidding? Oh, I feel like they... I mean... We always talk about, as veterinarians, we're like, look, there's dogs, there's cats. Cats. Let's go. They do their own thing. They don't do dog things. Cats
uh-uh.
do very unique cat-only behaviors, and this is a great example.
Of course, I do have a big orange tabby named Bruno, and he thinks he's a dog, so every morning when the dogs go out to pee, he mm-hmm. goes with them, comes back in,
yeah.
has his breakfast with the dogs. It's just the oddest thing, but he thinks he's a dog. Here's a question. I wanted to talk about feral cats, and, you know, we all encounter them, and many people want to come up with a way to shelter them on nights like last night. This person said, I just trapped a feral cat in my barn that was fighting with all my other barn cats. My horse vet happened to stop by this morning and neutered it. I was going to take
wonderful.
It to a shelter because of the fighting with my other cats, but now it is neutered. Do you think if I keep it in a cage for a while, it will eventually settle down and get along?
You know, cats, and we've talked about this, kind of just did, you know, cats do their own thing. Neutering can certainly reduce some territorial behavior, especially in male cats. Male cats can be very territorial. Domestic cats are unique in that they're, you know, social. If you think about most cats we have in the wild, think about bobcats, think about mountain lions, they're relatively solitary creatures. Really only the African lion and domestic cats have a strong social structure as part of their behavior. So it's always very strange to think, are they going to get along? to be honest, it may help, but it may not. The other thing that always worries me in this type of situation is a cat living in a carrier. How long are we talking that we can really maintain, especially a feral cat in a carrier? 24 hours, maybe a few days before, again, we're dealing with just urine, feces, a hygiene problem. Because cats can take up to 3 weeks, or I even say in a house up to 3 months to adjust. So remember that when we neuter and spay animals, the hormones don't leave immediately. There's a lag period. So even then, in a case like this, you may still have fighting. If that's a risk and you feel like the shelter is a better place, that's probably what I would tend to do. Yeah.
Yeah. Here comes another cat question. Our two cats seem to throw up quite a bit. What can we do to help them not do that?
So, again, kind of going back to this, cats are not little dogs. It's an interesting thing. The first thing I would ask you is what do we mean by throw up? And it sounds like a very strange question. But remember, cats do a lot more self-grooming than dogs do. Dogs do a little, but cats groom a lot, and they're really made to do so. The shapes of their tongues, those little hooks on their tongue. So they can ingest a lot of hair. And it is very natural and normal for them to vomit up that hair from time to time. So if that's what's happening, that might be normal. But if vomit contains just liquid, if it's just food, if it's something else, certainly, that's always abnormal. So, first things first, what kind of vomiting are we talking about? And then the other thing I'd wonder about, I would go back to food. And Lisa, how I feel about nutrition. Oh my gosh, it's like a whole, this is why people get PhDs in nutrition and women don't have one. Super complicated.
Yeah.
But if you have cats that are vomiting and it's abnormal vomiting and it's happening all the time, I'd worry a little bit that their food is not the right choice for them. And it doesn't mean an allergy. It doesn't mean we've got to buy super special food. It might just be it's time to change brands. If we're feeding a fish-based diet, maybe go to chicken. If we're feeding chicken, maybe go to fish. Maybe talk to your vet about what's really happening. And then the very last question I would ask is, are we losing weight with this or are we staying the same? Because that really matters. Mm. The severity. If we're losing weight, if we're having other symptoms, this definitely first stop needs to be in a veterinary office because that's a sign of a more serious problem.
Yeah. And I always felt, I'm just going to be honest with you, not to insult your profession, but I always thought, my vet's always trying to sell me food. And my 13-year-old husky, obviously mm-hmm. has some very severe arthritic issues. He's old, his hips hurt, and they said, try this food. And I'm telling you what, it has made a huge difference.
Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing is I know people get really, and I understand, like, some of those recommendations are expensive. So, there's some natural, like, do I have to? Gosh, this is going to be costly. I promise a couple of things. One, that food is not marked up very much. We don't stock a ton of it typically in a clinic. We don't want it to go bad and get moldy, get ricky, right?
Right.
And so the markup on it is relatively small. I mean, we just want to basically be able to pay our technicians, pay the electric company, all those things. But the food itself is expensive, and there's reasons behind it. There's a lot of science behind prescription diets. So we're really pushing one. Talk to us. I just talked to someone the other day. I'm like, it's okay. If it's not affordable for you, be honest. And we'll talk about other options.
Right.
I'm not going to hold it against you. Let's figure out the best option for you and your family. But sometimes those prescription diets can be really remarkably good.
Yeah.
Some really great results.
I have seen results with him. And it's more expensive. But my vet was kind enough to say, hey, if you can find it cheaper on Chewy, I'll write the prescription. You can get it there. But honestly, it wasn't any cheaper. It wasn't. So talk to your vet about that.
That's
be honest.
The case.
And we're thankful for this vet because she is our favorite. It's Dr. Dana Varbel, and we'll continue our conversation next. I want to talk about dogs with dementia and how you house a feral cat and keep it warm on a cold night. Chief Veterinary Officer for the North American Veterinary Community and Chicago's Exotic Pet Vet. Let's talk about those feral cats. I know some people take styrofoam coolers, cut out a little hole. Some people take, whatever kind of animal carrier they have and put straw or hay in it because those cats in your neighborhood, many of them have been part of the trap neuter, release program, but on cold nights you want to do something. So what do you suggest people do?
Well, those are both great suggestions, Lisa, first and foremost. I will add, it can be tempting to bring them inside, especially the ones that are a little more adjusted to humans, maybe a little bit more friendly. Be very, very cautious about doing so. You know, unfortunately, being a feral cat means they have a higher incidence of contagious diseases, things like feline leukemia virus, feline immunodeficiency virus, or even just parasites. So, one, you don't want those around your other pets, and you don't want those around yourself and your family either. So do try and keep them separated from, again, inside areas. So a styrofoam cooler or even an insulated cardboard box outside is a great idea. Now, keep in mind, the more of a home you make for these guys, the more likely they are to stick around and become dependent. Yeah. So everyone kind of has to use their own judgment there. I have had a couple of folks who just do, you know, an open barn door or a partially open garage door on cold nights. One thing I would caution against, too, is it's tempting to, like, let them in the garage and then shut the door. And you can. And, again, some of them are a little more adjusted to human presence. But keep in mind, again, some of them might become destructive or stressed by that. So I do like to say areas that you can leave open for them to come and go as they please. Areas where if you take the box away or take this cooler away or take something away where they're not going to become super dependent on it. So, again, sheds, outdoor areas, and just keep them away from your other pets and other animals, too. Like if you have backyard chickens, remember they are natural predators no matter how much they're fed.
Someone sent I haven't verified it, but they're very upset. They said the LaSalle County, Illinois County Board just enacted a rule which prohibits the feeding and watering of feral cats in unincorporated areas. And, of course, that destroys the work of people who do TNR, which is trap, neuter, release. And the idea of that is once your cat is neutered, they notch its ears so you can visibly see that cat has been neutered. And it's to keep rodent populations down. So I'll look into that. Anyway, let's quickly talk about dogs with dementia, because we've gotten a few text messages. And how do you tell if your dog has dementia?
Well, you know, it certainly is more common. And it's become more common because our dogs are living longer lives. You know, the average age of dogs over the last 40 years has increased about 50%. In the 80s, dogs lived to be about 8. That was a bit, you know, an average, certainly some are less and some are more, but 8 on average. Whereas today it's 12. And again, we know, especially those smaller breeds, those toy breed dogs, it is very, very common for them to live beyond 12. So we are seeing more examples, more cases of doggy dementia. And the things to look out for are kind of some big changes in behavior. And the things that stand out to me, loss of housebreaking. If all of a sudden you've got a dog that, you know, never had an accident inside and that's starting to happen more and more, sure, at the vet we want to rule out urinary tract infections, kidney disease, but that can be a sign. Loss of other training is common. Like if your dog was a great, you know, sit, stay, down, did all of those things, it had some other tricks, shook, did circles, and all of a sudden those things go away. Again, can be a sign of joint pain, but also just a sign of, look, I forgot how to do things. Oh. I don't remember them. Or maybe they're not as consistent either. You know, maybe they still remember them sometime, but not all the time. And very similar to human dementia, we can see a change throughout the day. So, for example, if you wake up and your dog's with it, doing all the old tricks, completely normal, and you're seeing what they call, at least in humans, and we're starting to use the term in veterinary medicine too, a sundowner syndrome, where throughout the day, essentially the brain is getting more tired, and, you know, some of those neurons are just not firing like they were earlier in the day when the animal was rested. We can see that as well. More napping is another one, not unusual with age, so that's very subtle, but if you have an elderly dog that was always a big napper, but now is a really big napper, especially accompanied with these other symptoms.
All right.
And the last one I'll see is something called staring. They just stare off. Staring at a wall.
I was going to ask you that because we had someone who said that their dog just stands in the corner and stares at the wall.
Yeah, that's a common one. It's almost like they lost their space. So they're like, well, I'm just going to stand here in this corner until I remember what I was doing. So that could be a sign to check out. And we do have some medications and actually Lisa, some food supplements that can improve those symptoms. Oh, not going to completely resolve them, but can make them live good lives again.
Thank you so much. It's always lovely to talk to you. Have a beautiful weekend.
Everyone should stay warm.
That's Dr. Dana Varble, Chicago's exotic pet vet, Chicago Exotic Pet Hospital, and the North American veterinary community. She's the chief.